Welcome. This is Michelle Marchant Johnson with Love Life Coaching, also the host of the Ready for the Right Guy Global Virtual Gathering. And I'm so happy to welcome you today to part one of Get Your Good Guy GPS. This is a three-part webcast series, and part one today will be titled Turn on Your Own Inner Good Guy GPS. For this first module, we'll be talking specifically about you and some of the internal things that you can be aware of and some of the things that you can do to help fine-tune your own inner guide to help you meet and attract the right man. And then in part two, we'll be teaching you some fine-tuning skills to help you recognize the good guys and how to avoid the guys that might not be right for you. And then in part three, we'll be doing a group coaching session called Get Your GPS System Guidance, where we'll be taking your one-on-one questions and we'll be addressing those individually in the group setting. And I'm so excited today to be joined by my very special guest, who is my own dear and wonderful husband, Benjamin Johnson. Welcome, Benjamin.
Oh, thank you so much. It's great to be doing this again. I enjoyed it so much last time, and it's great to be back.
Many of you are familiar with Benjamin and have had the privilege of hearing him before. Besides being my husband, and I'll admit I'm very biased in his behalf, I can tell you that he is very wise and he's very caring about the ladies in my community, and he wants the very best for you in life and love, and I'm sure you'll feel of his wisdom and care and concern as we go through this webcast today. And he's really back by popular demand because he's been so kind as to participate with me on other webcasts before, and the ladies love hearing his point of view and the male perspective and really love hearing from him. You may have heard him on some of our other recordings like The Right Man Will and The Right Man Won't. And Benjamin and I are going to be teaming up for this particular course, and I'm so honored and happy to have him with me. Thank you again, Benjamin, sweetheart, for being here with me.
Oh, so happy to do it.
Just by way of introduction of the Get Your Good Guy GPS program, many of you have heard me say, if you want to be with the right guy, you need to avoid being tangled up with the wrong guy. And that really is the foundational philosophy, if you will, behind the idea for this particular class. And if you're like most of the women in my community, then you would like to have a deeply satisfying, committed, love of your life kind of a relationship with a man you admire, respect, and love. A relationship with someone that loves, cherishes, and adores you. And you and your life, your time, your attention, your affection, and your love are the most precious things that you have to give. And they should not be given away lightly if you want this deep, satisfying kind of soulmate love. It's helpful to have some additional wisdom and guidance. And it would be nice if we could have our own little personal GPS guidance system in life and in love to help us make the best choices for ourselves. But sometimes that gets a little tricky. And that's why we want to share with you some things that we believe will be helpful and beneficial to you on your journey to love. Just a little background on this concept of the GPS and the guidance system that we have internally, but sometimes is not functioning at its highest level. Perhaps the earliest form of what we might now consider the ancestor of a GPS system might be the compass. And compasses have been around for a very, very long time. In fact, clear back as far as like 2006 BC, the Chinese Han Dynasty. And of course, a compass points to north, south, east, or west, with north being kind of that guidance system. If you kind of know when you're heading due north, that can really help you avoid being lost through the forest or the trees. Now, a GPS system, of course, is a more modern version and a more advanced version in terms of technology, and it's almost mind-boggling to think of how it works, but basically it's a space-based navigation system that can provide location and time information in all different types of weather conditions anywhere on or near the Earth where there's an unobstructed line of sight to four or more GPS satellites. And of course, the GPS system provides important military, civil, and commercial functions and uses for people around the world. And in our love lives, if we can get our own inner GPS system more finely tuned and be more in tune with the kind of man that you might want to be with, it can help you avoid being lost or wandering out there into relationships that might take years of your life and years of opportunity away from you if you didn't recognize them early on. And one of the dangers is that oftentimes we'll get into an opportunity or a relationship and find ourselves months or even years down the road thinking, wow, I'm not sure this is really where I want to be. And perhaps there were some early signs in the early stages that maybe we chose to ignore, or perhaps our inner GPS was just a little off when we made that choice. But the intention of our course here is to help you to make wiser and better choices when you are meeting and interacting with men and exploring new dating opportunities. That's just a little bit by way of introduction. And today we're going to be sharing with you seven key things to keep in mind and seven areas or challenges that oftentimes can get in the way from that inner GPS system working at its optimal level. And both Benjamin and I will share some of our thoughts and give you some ideas along these lines. Let's go right ahead and really get started with our main content for today. The first inner GPS guidance system principle that I'd like to share with you to get us started is that it's really important to be very clear about what you really want. Now, this might sound really basic and fundamental and even simplistic. However, as I speak to women every day and I ask them the question, if you could have anything you want in terms of a relationship within the next 6 months to a year, what would that look like? Oftentimes what we find is that while they might have some idea about what they want, there can also be some ambivalence in there as well. For example, a woman might actually have a bit of an internal tug of war going on where she really deeply does desire intimacy and love and a committed relationship, and yet there's fears that are blocking her. Perhaps she's afraid because of past relationships where she's been hurt or disappointed, or she's afraid of losing her identity, autonomy, or independence by being swallowed up in a relationship. This happens frequently because many of the women that I work with have a little bit more life experience, and many are successful in their careers and have worked very hard, either out of necessity or because they want to be very strong and independent. And many are afraid of being swallowed up or losing at least a part of themselves in the context of a relationship. And it's really important to have clarity and really be willing to look at this closely within yourself to make a determination about what it is that you really want and to explore what might be going on even subconsciously that might be in conflict with what you say you really want. And then I also think that it's incredibly important to be clear about the kind of person that you would want to be with. And I tend to have women look at this on a much deeper level than just making a little list of the kind of guy that you might want to have. I really like to invite you to look deeply at the heart and character qualities of the kind of person that you would want to be with. And also, I have an exercise that I take women through to help you get really clear about what your own deepest love, wants, and needs are so that you can be aware of the kind of person and the kind of relationship that would be most fulfilling and satisfying for you. And while we don't have an opportunity to go through those exercises at this time, a really good place to start if you want to begin to get some clarity about some of your deepest love, wants, and needs would be the book, The Five Love Languages, which is readily available on Amazon. I want to invite you, Benjamin, to share a little bit more on this topic of being clear about what you really want and how that might be beneficial to the women on their journey to love.
Well, as you were saying, to some it may seem, well, this is obvious. I'm going into a relationship. I want a relationship. But I think, as we'll talk more about in the second item on our list, as far as placing a high value on yourself, everyone is coming into a relationship with their own vision and their own goals as to what's going to happen. And a key element here is that a lot of times, and I see this mistake, you know, it's made by both sexes, of course, but women particularly will come to the conclusion that the actions that they take and what they give in the relationship will somehow produce a desired result in the other person. And whereas what's really going to happen is that the other person is going to act according to his own goals, desires, and plans in the relationship, which is why as we go forward and talk about things like giving too much too soon, etc., we'll see the importance of having that vision of what you desire and want in the relationship and moving forward with that purpose, because you're going to fulfill those desires by purposeful actions. You're not going to fulfill them by giving, you know, by giving certain things to others and hoping that they give you the right things in return.
Yeah, that was very well said, and I really appreciate you mentioning that. And getting that clarity becomes somewhat of a North Star, if you will. And this is one of the areas that I work with my clients on in the early stages, because it creates an inspiring vision for you to hang on to and to get you through the rough patches or those times of fear or doubt. And part of my role as a coach when I work with my clients is to hold that vision for them during those times of doubt or fear. And so having this clarity, not only about what you really want, but what your deepest love wants and needs are, and the heart and character qualities of the kind of man that you would like to be with, can be an incredibly valuable place to start in fine-tuning your inner good guy GPS. The second one that I want to introduce to you today is called Place an Exceptionally High Value on Yourself. Now, again, this may sound somewhat simplistic, or it may sound very similar to things that you hear all of the time, but I often say that if I could stand on the mountaintops near where I live in Salt Lake City, and I had a megaphone and a voice that could reach all of the women in the world, this is what I'd most want to say, which is to place an exceptionally high value upon yourself and recognize yourself as a high-value woman. And the reason I feel so strongly about this is because what I see happen so frequently is if a woman does not feel worthy of being loved, cherished, and adored, or she's not placing a high value upon herself, then she tends to gravitate toward relationships which are harmful, disappointing, heartbreaking, and unsatisfying, and sometimes even devastating to that woman. And a woman can get caught up in a pattern that can even last a lifetime, and it can literally strip her of her feminine energy, of her confidence, of her grace, and of her hope. And I speak to women that have been on those kind of journeys and are seeking to try to make a change, but it really begins internally with you believing that you are lovable and worthy of being loved exactly as you are right now. And we're going to talk about some of the ways that you can get more in touch with this as we go through the webcast today. But it's incredibly important for you to place a high value upon yourself, because unfortunately, the world doesn't do that for you. If you don't place an exceptionally high value upon yourself, and if you don't believe that you are worthy of being loved, cherished, and adored, and if you aren't able to set boundaries and to have expectations about how you are going to be treated and things that you are or are not willing to put up with in a relationship, then it's easy to fall into the trap of settling for much less than you deserve. And that, to me, is one of the most heartbreaking things that can happen in a woman's life. And I've been in those kind of relationships in the past myself. I had some of the exact same kind of struggles that we're talking about here. So I understand. And in fact, pretty much everything that we're talking about here today has been part of my own journey and is typically part of the journey of most of the women that I work with. Benjamin, I'd love for you to share some of your thoughts and perspective on why you feel like it's so important for a woman to place such an exceptionally high value on herself.
Yes. Well, as long as we're grabbing megaphones and climbing up mountains here, the one phrase that must, as a woman, the one phrase that must never come out of your mouth is, well, this is not what I want, but I probably should stay because I'm not going to be able to attract anything better. That's the one phrase that completely sabotages all of your desires for the relationship you want. Because one news flash item here is, if we go back to the first item on this list about what you really want and desire in a relationship, if you desire a long-term, committed, caring relationship with a guy who's willing to go the distance, and you're placing a high value on yourself, then there's no risk. And what I mean by that is, when you run into a guy that has the same goals, when you run into a guy that is also looking for an intimate, long-term relationship, he's not going to be the kind of guy that after, you know, 2, 3, 4 dates is trying to push you, is trying to go in for perhaps more intimacy than you're comfortable with, and giving you this message that, well, you know, let's take this to the next level or I'm out of here. The right guy, the guy who finds himself attracted to you and the guy that has those same goals, when he sees the value that you put on yourself, when he sees the dignity and the feminine grace that you show, he will not only stick around, he will become closer to you. Because that dignity, that feminine grace, as Michelle has put it, is magnetic to the right guy, and really always will be.
Oh, I really appreciate how you said that. The GPS inner guide principle number 3 is to see yourself through the eyes of compassion. Now, why do you think this is so important? Well, as I mentioned, most of the women that I work with are a little bit more mature, have had a little bit of experience in life, have typically had some relationships, some that have gone maybe not as well as they hoped. They may have some disappointment, heartbreak, or frustration in terms of what's happened in their love lives so far. They may feel like they've chosen kind of a different version of the wrong guy multiple times. And when they come to me, they want to have hope and they want to believe, but there's also some nagging doubts and some fears, and also sometimes some self-judgment based on them feeling like they haven't always made the wisest or best choices, and feeling like they are uncertain whether they have the capacity and the capability to make wiser and better choices when it comes to men. The good news is, absolutely, it's possible. And one of the keys to making better and wiser decisions is to be able to recognize what patterns might have shown up in the past. But another big key, and this is the basis for this principle, is that it's really important to be able to see yourself from a place of compassion rather than from a place of judgment. Now, there are various models that talk about basic human needs. Probably one of the more famous ones is Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And if you look at Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right after the basic physiological needs of food, clothing, shelter, safety, up on that scale are our needs for love, intimacy, belonging, community, companionship. And if you do feel like me, you've wandered out in the woods for a while, your inner GPS was off, and you may have been in the wrong relationships or invested a lot of your time, heart, energy, intention into the wrong man, I want to assure you that there is hope and that you can look at yourself not from a place of judgment or beating yourself up for whatever real or perceived mistakes you've made, but from a place of recognizing that you were just actually doing the best you could at the time to get one of your most basic human needs met. And really, this can drive us to do all kinds of crazy things. The things that we'll do in order to find that love and that acceptance sometimes seem almost extreme, and sometimes when we look back on them, we go, wow, I can't believe that I did all of that. I know for me, there was one relationship in particular that I got involved with that ended up being very detrimental and harmful to me. And as I look back on it now, I think, how in the world did I ever go down that path? And at times I've been tempted to beat myself up for it. But what I recognize is that I was just in a real vulnerable place at the time. And I was, in the moment, doing the best that I could. And I just believe that as you see yourself from a place of compassion rather than from judgment, that helps release you from any holds that these experiences from the past might still have on you. And it's okay to say that you're worthy of being loved, cherished, and adored despite whatever mistakes or whatever missed opportunities or lapses in judgment you feel like you might have had. Recognize that you may have been coming from a place of fear. You may have been in a vulnerable place. You may have been in a place in your life where you just were seeking love in whatever way you knew how at that point. And I just think it's really important to have compassion for yourself. Brené Brown said, "You are imperfect, you are wired for struggle, but you are worthy of love and belonging." And I just want to remind you of that. Benjamin, what thoughts do you have along the lines of seeing ourselves and inviting the women to see themselves through the eyes of compassion?
Well, this is so important, and it ties in, it kind of ties in with the last thing we talked about putting a high value on yourself. Those of you who are calling in from the U.S. or the U.K. May have heard of a show called What Not to Wear. Here in the U.S., it was hosted by Stacey London and Clinton Kelly, and one of the things that stuck with me most from the show, apart from knowing when a woman should be wearing an A-line skirt versus a pencil skirt. Okay, my wife jokes. She says, okay, because you watched that show, you're now the world's only straight male female fashion guru. I did pick up a few things. But a very consistent message, and I was very grateful to see them doing this, because a very consistent message that they gave to the women who came onto the show for a celebrity makeover was exactly that. And many of the women would come on with their initial wardrobes and would look, shall we say, overtly sexy. And the point that they would always make is that really is an offspring of a form of insecurity. And they would help these women understand how, you know, less can be much, much more, you know, leaving it to the imagination, etc. So what that comes back to is avoiding, not just with clothing choices, but avoiding those things that telegraph the message that somehow you're unworthy of the highest, most committed expressions of love from a man, because you are worthy. And just as these just as these TV hosts would help these women see how dressing in a more feminine, less revealing way revealed that, you also can reveal in your choices of all kinds that security, that inner security you have about your own femininity, your own value.
Mm-hmm. And much of this comes from seeing yourself from a place of compassion and kindness and recognizing that you are already enough. You don't have to do or go to these extremes in order to get the attention of the right man for you. Our fourth inner GPS guidance principle is really an important one. And again, all of these really tie in together, but they're worth mentioning individually, and that is to allow the time and the space to get to know someone. No matter what age or station of life that we're in, it's really important to remember that you really can't rush real love. That doesn't mean there can't be intense attraction and chemistry and all of those exciting things right out of the gate. But it really does take some time to really get to know someone. And one of the things that I always ask the women that I work with to do is to approach a new opportunity and a new relationship from a place of what I like to call curiosity and observation. Before you jump in, the old phrase, look before you leap, before you jump in and go all in on a relationship, it's really important to be curious about who this person is, pay attention to all the little signs and subtleties and things that they're saying and doing and how they're showing up, and then to observe and to see if things like his actions and his words are consistent and if he's someone that is reliable and how he interacts not just with you but with other people and how he is in terms of his responsibilities, in terms of his professional life, in terms of any child support or children or other people in his life that he might have an obligation to. Because it takes time to get to know a person's character, it's really important to allow that space and time in the early stages. Because what happens is, if the chemistry is really strong right out of the gate, we can mistake chemistry for compatibility. And long term, that doesn't typically work out so well. Some of these relationships that begin like a raging forest fire can be very alluring because it feels so exciting and so good to be like the focus of someone's attention and to feel this incredible chemistry. And yet, what might just be chemistry can lead us to believe that there's a long-term match or compatibility here before we really even know the character of someone. And that can be one of the ways that we can get lost out there in the weeds or the woods, so to speak, and it can really throw off our inner GPS system. I always say when it comes to love, we have to be able to balance the head and your thoughts, your heart, your feelings, and your hormones, or that chemistry. And if one of those overrides the others, the head, the heart, or the hormones override the other too, then oftentimes we do get lost out in the woods of a relationship. And I would say probably the chemistry one is the one that tends to override the other two most frequently. I even wrote an article some time ago on datingadvice.com called The Woes and Wonders of the Whirlwind Romance, where I talked about how this intense initial kind of whirlwind romance that can happen based on a lot of chemistry can feel so exciting and alluring and almost irresistible in the early stages, but it often doesn't lead us to a relationship of real compatibility. And that's not to say that that physical attraction isn't important, but it's important for you to take the time to make sure there's more than that there and that the compatibility factor is really something that will be beyond whatever might be an initial chemistry and physical attraction. When I interviewed John Gray a year or so ago, one of the things that he even recommended is that if you find yourself in a pattern where you continue to get in these whirlwind relationships and find yourself getting involved with a man faster than you really anticipated, or you find that you've had a pattern of connecting with men where there was a lot of initial chemistry but not having long-term compatibility. He even recommends that you give men a chance that you might not feel that initial surge of chemistry with. And his theory, of course, is that if he's the right man, he's a man of character, that oftentimes that chemistry piece can grow and it can develop in some cases and might help you to not fall into that trap of the whirlwind romance. Allowing the time and space to get to know someone in the early stages is really essential. It can also help prevent you from spending and investing your time and your life and your love and your energy into the wrong relationship with the wrong guy, and helps you to stay available for the right relationship with the right guy. Benjamin, I know you'll have some things to add here in terms of allowing the time and space to get to know someone.
Oh, yeah. okay, to reiterate something I said earlier, if he's the right guy, meaning if his desires and goals in the relationship are like yours, taking a go slow position is risk free. He's not going to wander off or storm off because of that. And keep in mind that having great chemistry with someone means that you have great chemistry with someone. it's a biological response. As Michelle was saying, it tells you nothing of your compatibility. It doesn't reach into a man's mind and allow you to read it, saying what are his goals, what are his desires, what kind of character does he have, etc. So this is such a key point to remember. And several years before I met Michelle, I met a woman in a class that I was taking, and we got to know each other very well, and saw each other very casually. But I was getting some signals from her that more might possibly be welcomed. But there was, in those three H's that Michelle just talked about, there was a bit of a problem. Now, the hormone piece wasn't, really a problem. I found myself attracted to her. But as I spoke with her and talked to her, I realized that she had some goals that were something I really couldn't manage, couldn't go along with. She placed a high value on herself, but that took the form of really wanting to be with a man who could really give her the upmarket, very wealthy kind of life. She wanted to be the very glamorous, very elegant woman on the arm of a very successful man, and she would raise his very, very perfect, well-behaved children, and she would live a very luxurious life. And so here I am, I'm feeling all this chemistry, but in the end I backed off and quietly sought opportunities elsewhere, because my head told me that I work for a government agency in securities and investment regulation, and I'm never likely going to be at any Midtown Manhattan power cocktail parties and such, so I knew that that was not consistent with my goal, and so I had to push back the chemistry to the back burner and make other choices.
I'm sure glad you did.
Well, me too.
I'm so glad you're available for me. But that's a perfect example of how, if Benjamin had chosen to gone down the path because of the chemistry, and ignored some of the other things that were coming up in terms of the overall compatibility, how this could be potential for disaster in the long run, and a lot of frustration and heartbreak and disappointment likely for both people. And that's why it really is wise to slow things down in the beginning and take time to really catch your breath, even if the chemistry is intense, and to try to balance the head, the heart, and the hormones. And that's one of the ways that I work with my clients. By becoming their virtual wing woman, I can help them to see some of the things that might be going on that they might not be noticing, particularly if they're caught up in a really enticing chemistry situation. It's seldom that I talk to a woman where they say, in fact, I'm not sure I ever have, where they say, wow, I wish I'd have let things go faster. But I've talked to many women over the years who have told me that they wished they had slowed things down and taken it slower in the beginning and not gotten involved so fast or so soon. The next one is one of my favorite topics, and this is something that I work a lot with many of my clients, and it's something that I am learning more about and developing and evolving in even within myself, and that's called embrace your feminine grace in your interactions with men. What do I mean by this? Well, we could have an entire class on this alone, and in fact we will at some point in the future, but in the interest of time today, we'll try to give you a few ideas that can be helpful along these lines. First of all, as I already mentioned, many of the women that I work with, out of necessity or out of just being amazing, accomplished women, have grown to be very strong and independent and self-sufficient and have excelled in careers or other aspects of their lives and have developed what we might call a little bit of the male energy. Now, the truth is we all both have male and female energy, and both can serve us well in certain situations. In fact, that goal-oriented, kind of single-focused, outcome-oriented, take-initiative kind of approach that is often thought of as being a more masculine kind of way of approaching things can be very valuable in many, many situations. And particularly in a lot of business situations or places where there are specific structured goals and things that either an individual or a group of individuals is hoping to accomplish. However, this doesn't always translate so well into our interpersonal relationships and our interactions with men if we're operating from that kind of energy. And so how does this show up? Well, one example from my own life is I worked for over 20 years in some fairly high-level positions in corporate America, and I was in one position at one point, this was years ago, where I was paid a salary, but then at the end of the year I got a very large annual bonus, and this annual bonus represented what might even be like a year's salary for many people. It was pretty substantial. And, of course, I was dating this man at the time, and this was back in the day still where they still would give you your paycheck as a paper check. And I got this annual bonus, and I really wanted to impress him, and so I showed him this check, and I was all excited about it. But I was really, my intention was really, I wanted him to be impressed with me, and I wanted him to like me, and I wanted him to think, wow, how amazing she is, and wow, I should really want to be with her. But it's really strange, even looking back on that now, I can remember that when I showed him this check, he didn't really seem that excited about it. In fact, he kind of was just staring at it, and I just remember thinking his reaction was not what I expected. Well, of course, as I look back on it now, and in subsequent knowledge, and of course hindsight is always 20/20, I realize that what had actually happened there is that check represented almost as much as he made in an entire year. And I think what was happening in his mind was he was thinking, wow, am I going to be able to produce enough that this woman is going to be happy or satisfied with me? And it almost created more of a competitive energy rather than fostering the opportunity for romance. And this was someone that I really cared about and really liked at that time. But I was going about that in the wrong way. And there were a couple of times in my relationship with him where I didn't think he was taking the appropriate amount of initiative, and so I would, in my way that I thought I was being very subtle, I would try to move things along. the truth is, ladies, men know when we're doing that, no matter how subtle it is that we're trying to, no matter how subtle we think we're being and how we approach.
I can confirm that.
Yeah. Men are on to us when it comes to this. You know, if we think we're going to just send that little text or we're just going to invite in this way or that, and we think that they don't know what we're doing, they do know what we're doing. And there were times when I tried to kind of move things along a little bit, and I thought I was doing it in a very feminine way, but in fact, I was taking a more masculine approach of trying to make things happen and trying to initiate, even though I thought I was doing it in a very subtle way. And I just want you to know that I believe that, particularly in the early stages of a relationship, we have to allow for what I like to call sacred space. Let me tell you a little bit about what I mean by that. I call it sacred space because it's space and time for a relationship to develop and evolve in a natural way. I believe if you're with the right guy, the things will move forward in a natural and graceful way without you having to move it along or prod or probe. And we hear this all the time. We hear some version of, when the right person comes along, it's just going to happen and things will just fall into place. And I can remember hearing that in my 43 years as a single woman and thinking, yeah, right. And I've got some oceanside property here in Utah to sell you here as well. But the truth is, that's exactly what happened when it came to my relationship with Benjamin. There wasn't any manipulation. There wasn't any game playing. Things just naturally progressed. But one of the reasons that I think things naturally progressed is that I was finally in a place in my own life where I had the confidence and I had the awareness to allow for that sacred space, meaning that if it was a day or two longer than I wished that he would call me, I didn't call him. I didn't initiate. I allowed for that space and time. And it's an opportunity for a man to think about you, to miss you, to realize he might like to see you again, and for him to have the space and the time to step up and be a man and step up into that role of initiating and continuing the opportunity for the relationship to progress. And if we interrupt that sacred space as a woman, it can take away a man's motivation and it can potentially create the kind of energy where he begins to feel a little bit more pursued and he can actually lose interest. Can often have the opposite result or effect than what we hope or than what we intend for it to have. And most women, no matter how independent or strong or self-sufficient or amazing they are, and I believe you can be and let your light shine in the world, but most women, no matter how accomplished or educated or successful they are, they still prefer to be with a man who takes the initiative and the lead role, at least in the early stages of the relationship. Now, once you're in a more established relationship, you can have a little bit more give and take and a little bit more flow. But I think especially in the initial stages, this is really important to remember this time of sacred space. And it's not always the easiest thing to do because you want things to move along, especially if you're excited about someone and you think it has real potential. And there's a little bit of discomfort in allowing for that time and space. But I think it's really essential and really important to keep in mind. And then once you're in more of an established relationship, there's plenty of time for you to give all that you want to give, and you can get more into the flow of a little bit more give and take. But in the early stages, I think this is so essential and so important. That's one way that you show up as a feminine woman and embrace your feminine grace, so to speak. And I like to give this idea of leaning back. What do I mean by that? Well, all I mean is if you think about both physically and figuratively leaning back rather than leaning forward into the relationship and being in more of a receptive and receiving mode rather than an initiating mode, I think this can really help in your interactions and staying more in that feminine grace with men. And this whole concept of graciously receiving and not giving much too fast, too soon has literally transformed the love life relationships of many of my clients. It's incredibly powerful, and it might seem kind of subtle. You might have to dance with it a little and practice with it a little, but it's incredibly powerful. Benjamin, what would you like to add here?
Oh, boy, what would I like to add? Yeah, first off, and I'm glad, Michelle, you mentioned this toward the end. It's important to know what we're talking about and what we're not talking about. We're not talking about, you know, pretending or coming across as being any less than you actually are. We're not talking about hiding your, hiding your abilities, talents, anything like that. As I said, I think in one of our earlier recordings that Michelle and I did, I used the quote where a woman made the observation that the right man will not be scared off by a strong and successful woman, but the right man may be scared off by an invulnerable woman. A woman who is in that masculine energy, that may make it more difficult. Whereas being in that feminine energy, this is another area where we have to be careful as to what we are talking about. That does not mean passivity. That does not mean, you know, waiting around and basically doing nothing until he does something. What it means is graciously receiving what this guy is in the early stages. He's stumbling around. He's trying to figure out in his head. And trust me, all guys do this. If they found a woman that they're very attracted to, they're very impressed with, they've got this complex maze of thoughts going through their head, saying, "Okay, what do I do now? What will impress her the most? What will make her feel most pleased or most valued or what have you?" And it's the simple responses when you're in that feminine element. It's the simple responses that make all the difference in the world. For example, if a man takes you out for something, dinner, the theater, whatever it happens to be, something that you truly enjoyed, even something as simple as an email or a text message or whatever that just says, "Thank you, that was so wonderful. I had a great time." You know, that guy is going to be slapping his palm on his desk saying, yeah. And he's going to be standing up taller and, walking around throughout the day. It's not passivity, but it's that warm responsiveness that acknowledges, hey, you're doing a good job. And even the most strong and capable and brilliant person, you know, whether man or woman, even that type of person has fears, has insecurities, has concerns, has ways they feel that they're not measuring up. So it's at the appropriate times in the relationship, it's about allowing those vulnerabilities to be seen. And if a man is impressed with you so much so that, you know, he's dragging his lower jaw along the floor, you know, but suddenly he realizes, hey, wait a minute, here's a way I can make a difference. Here's a way that I am really going to please her, to enrich her life, to fill her with gratitude towards what I'm doing. that's going to make all the difference in the world.
I'm so glad you mentioned this, Benjamin, and I just want to bring this kind of full circle here for a second and remind the women on the call about a subtlety here and a distinction. One of the reasons I think that we have a tendency of women to want to overgive too much, too fast, too soon, and that can put us into more of the pursuing or taking the initiative kind of role, is that we feel like we need to do this in order to have someone like us and to try to further the relationship. But what women don't always recognize, and this is what you brought our attention to, Benjamin, is that you are actually giving back to a man in the way that he most can appreciate it and in the way that can inspire his masculine energy and make him feel really good. When you receive of his gifts and acknowledge what he does for you and express your appreciation and admiration for him, and that is much more powerful in terms of what you can give to a man than taking that initiative or fixing him dinner or doing those things that we might feel like we need to start doing right out of the gate. You are actually giving back to him. It's just in a different way in many cases than how he's actually giving to you. And I just think that's a really important distinction to make. Our next one is, this goes along with some of the other things we've talked about, but I think it's really important, and that's to forgive yourself and others for the real or perceived mistakes or errors that you have made in your life and in your love life. I want to illustrate this a little bit with a story, but before I do that, I just want to say there's this school of thought out there that says that people are making their decisions when it comes to relationships and how they interact with and show up with other people, either from a place of love or from a place of fear. And this comes back to what we were talking about earlier in terms of having compassion for yourself when you recognize that some of the decisions that you've made might have come from a place of being in a place of fear and because you're just trying to get your deepest needs met. And the longer I live, I really believe there's something to this concept that when we show up and how we show up and how we behave in relationships, we're typically either in a place where we're feeling loving and safe in our hearts or we're feeling afraid. And when we're in a place of fear, there can be a lot of different emotions that can get layered on top of that, like anger or frustration or whatever. But at the basis of all of that, often there's fear. And this is the story I want to share. I was reading on a blog. It's called chriscade.com. C-H-R-I-S-C-A-D-E, chriscade.com. And I would recommend this man's blog, by the way, because he has some wonderful posts. But he shares a story that I think really is profound and speaks really well to this particular point. And I'll read just a little bit of what he says, but I'll paraphrase most of it in the interest of time. But he basically said that he grew up with a very intense hatred of bees because he was allergic to them. And when he got stung, he would get these very large welts. And he said as soon as a bee came anywhere near him, he would feel panicky, try to run away, try to swat it away or jump in a pool, whatever it took to try to avoid getting stung by a bee. And he cites a case where he was just sitting, minding his own business, eating lunch, and he said, out of the blue, a bee randomly stung me on the back of my neck. And he said, that's when I knew that all bees are evil. And then he said his already existing fear intensified into something more, and he even described it as being anger and hatred toward these bees, and said, I'd be happy if I could never come across another bee in my life again. And he said that one day he was swimming in a pool, and he saw that there was a bee that had gotten into the pool, and the bee was actually drowning. The bee couldn't get out of the pool, and the bee was struggling, and he could tell that the bee was actually drowning. And he said he found himself feeling not afraid of this bee, but he actually felt like he wanted to try to help the bee. But he said, there was only one problem. I was already in the water. And he said, by the time I went to get a sandal or a flip-flop, came back and lifted the bee, it would probably be too late. And he said, then a bit of courage kicked in with a new idea. And he said, what if I used my hand? He said, now I was afraid, And I remembered all the previous bee stings, even including the one bee where I didn't deserve to be stung. He just stung me right out of the blue. And he said it didn't matter. I had to try and save its life. He said he put his hand under the water and slowly lifted it up underneath the bee. And he said the bee seemed calm. And then he moved the bee over onto the side of the pool. And he said this bee was really on its last leg. He said it was flapping its wings and trying to live, but he wasn't sure it was going to make it. He said slowly it shook its wings, started to walk around a little bit, shook its wings some more, and then he said after about 10 minutes it finally flew away. Here's the piece that I think applies to this particular principle about forgiving ourselves and others. And he said, we've all been stung before in our lives and in our hearts. Sometimes we hold back in relationships to avoid being stung. Sometimes we sting others first to try to avoid being stung. In a way, we're all like those little bees. And here's what he said. Though the bees didn't really want to sting me, they were probably just afraid of me, probably even more than I was afraid of them. Next time somebody hurts you or you hurt somebody, consider that underneath that experience is a fearful person, someone just like you who is trying to avoid being stung worse than they were before. And consider the possibility that compassion and an act of love sometimes has the power to transform a fearful situation into a heartful one. I just thought that was a really beautiful example and illustration of what we're talking about here. And if you do feel like there's some pain and some hurt and some forgiveness from the past that you need to extend to someone else, a really powerful practice that you can look up on the internet, or you can even email me about and I'll send you some more details on, is a practice called Ho'oponopono. And it's basically a Hawaiian forgiveness mantra that you can practice either on yourself or in behalf of someone else. And it's really powerful and really simple, and it can help you to release those things that may be tying you to people from your past that may have hurt you. And equally as important, and sometimes even harder, it can help you to forgive yourself from some of the mistakes or some of the errors or some of the lapses in judgment that you feel like you might have that you're still hanging on to and potentially beating yourself up over. Because what can happen is until we release the past, it can be projected into the present and even into the future and can really foul up the inner GPS system. Benjamin, what thoughts do you have in terms of this whole forgiveness piece?
Well, I don't know that there's much more I can add. It's so much of the baggage that blocks people's development has to do with this.
Mm-hmm.
And there is an energy, as someone once said, you know, forgiveness means giving up all hope of a better past.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't have a better past. So forgiveness simply clears that deck of. And it doesn't mean you still hang around with the same people or still allow them to heap anguish or problems into your life, but it does mean that you let go of that, because that changed energy in you will be visible. It will change the affect that you show to other people in a very profound way.
Yeah, thank you so much for adding that. And then our last inner GPS guidance system tip that we want to share today is to be willing to trust your inner guide and to be unafraid of the truth that it tells you. Again, if we come back to the idea of a GPS system, I know sometimes when I've been using a GPS system, it's giving me certain directions and it's guiding me to a place, but sometimes it doesn't quite make sense to me where it's taking me. Sometimes I think, well, this can't quite be the right path. And I believe that as women, we're given feminine intuition, divine inspiration, that gut instinct or feeling. I believe that we actually have a gift for this. But what happens is that we sometimes start doubting our own inner wisdom and our own inner GPS system, or we discount it or ignore it or decide to make a different choice even though our inner guide is telling us something different, or we make mistakes and then we lose confidence that we really do have an inner system that is functioning and working. However, what I do find is that if you're really in tune with that inner guide, that inner GPS system or that feminine intuition, that gut feeling, whatever you might want to call it, and you are willing to listen to it and be in touch with it despite what anyone else might be thinking or saying or telling you to do, it seldom will ever lead you astray. And I just think that it's important to remember that along with all of the advice that you get and along with all of the information that you seek, along with all of the advice you might receive solicited or otherwise from friends or family, it's really important to pay attention to your own inner guide and your own inner wisdom when it comes to making relationship decisions and decisions about your life and your love life. And the dictionary definition for intuition is a thing that one knows or considers likely from instinctive feeling rather than from conscious reasoning. Now, of course, there's a place for conscious reasoning, but it's also important to be internally guided by your inner wisdom and by that instinctive feeling and to pay attention to that, because that's often where the early warning signs for the red flags that might show up in the early stages of a relationship might show up. You might just have a little bit of feeling of discomfort. Something feels a little off. Something makes you feel a little bit uncomfortable. And those can be the more subtle versions of kind of the red flags that are waving in the wind. I just think that it's really important to trust and listen to that inner guide. And one of the ways that we can do this is to be in a place where we're willing to look at things from a place of truth. What do I mean by that? For example, you might have a nagging feeling or something that feels uneasy to you or uncomfortable to you that might be happening, but in your mind you might say, well, yeah, but he's such a great guy in this way, that way, or the other, or this relationship could be so great if he did this or that, or he changed in this way or that way. Well, anytime we start doing that kind of thing, we're going into a place of what I like to call fantasy, where instead of looking at the truth and the reality of what is actually happening and who this person might actually be or who the two of you might actually be together, we're creating this different version of reality, a fantasy, in our minds, and that can get us into a lot of trouble. So along with listening to that inner guide, we have to be willing to shine the light in those dark corners, so to speak, and be unafraid of seeing the truth, because the truth really does set us free. And just another little quote from Brené Brown on this. She says, "Only when we are brave enough to explore the darkness will we discover the infinite power of our light." And she said, "Owning our own story," or I might put in parentheses truth here, "can be hard, but not nearly as difficult as spending our lives running from it." And I have found in my own life that if I've chosen to allow myself to ignore that inner guide and not follow or trust it, it oftentimes led me into situations that were less than favorable and oftentimes very unhappy. And I believe that you have that gift as a woman, and it's something that you can really deeply tap into. And if you feel like you haven't been able to do that for a while, I want you to focus on just getting in touch with the physical reactions that take place in your body as you interact with other people, and try to get in touch with what you feel like your emotions, feelings, and your physiology is telling you without just totally going into the rational mind. Now, of course, there's a place for all of them. As I said earlier, you have to balance the head, the heart, and the hormones. But I just think this is a place that sometimes we don't realize we have a deep resource that we can tap into that is already with you and is already deeply available to you. Benjamin, what would you like to add here?
Well, just to finish up, it's really listening to that, you know, listening to that inner voice you have is important because it prevents you from making certain mistakes that are very common. One of those mistakes is thinking that, okay, I've got this relationship, and it's I have concerns. If only there would be this change or this change or this change. And the problem there is that people, and I can speak for men on this, and people don't change because of what someone else is doing. Whether it's nagging, whether it's subtle hints, or whether it's lots and lots of giving that's founded in a desire to just, you know, overwhelm the person with kindness. People, you can't make change occur in another person by what you do. But there's good news. The good news is people do change for the better when they find themselves in an environment of safety. When they find themselves in an environment where even the things about them that are kind of irritating, and heaven knows, Michelle knows all about my things here. I tell her that we've calculated it down to a decimal point here, that 87.3% of my goodness as a husband is directly due to her patience as a wife. We've scientifically calculated it down to a tenth of a percentage point. But what that illustrates to me is that she's the closest person to me in my life. She knows all of these things, and yet I know that life supplies more than enough critics outside of the home. The last thing any of us need is our greatest critic to be inside the home. And that's not what I experience. I experience a patience and a safety. What that allows is it allows for change. It allows for people to make more of themselves. And that's why attempting to make those, perhaps you might call them those yeah, but relationships, trying to make them work based upon what you're saying or what you're doing or what you think you can make happen is going to be really a fruitless exercise.
Yeah, I really appreciate you sharing that, Benjamin. And I really appreciate you joining me for this class because I know how valuable your insights are and how valuable it is to the women to hear your male perspective. And just so all of you know, Benjamin said we've determined the exact percentage of what constitutes his goodness as a husband as opposed to my patience as a wife, but I have to say I don't think he's quite correct on the calculations here, although he is brilliant when it comes to mathematics and accounting and those kinds of things. I have to say that he's just the sweetest man on the planet, and I'm so grateful that he's my husband. And that's one of the reasons that I do what I do, because having him in my life has made such an incredible difference and has been such an incredible blessing. And he and I have been married for almost 10 years now. He stood by me through a very difficult breast cancer journey, loved me through that. And that's one of the reasons that I'm so passionate about doing what I do, because I believe that you deserve to be in a loving, amazing, joyful, deeply satisfying relationship. But in order to do that, it sometimes does require a different and heightened level of awareness, and that's the whole point of the Get Your Good Guy GPS class, that we're teaching right now. As I mentioned earlier, in class two, we're going to be talking about fine-tuning your Good Guy GPS sensor, and we'll be sharing with you 10 key things to look for in a man early on in a relationship and things to be watching for that can help you fine-tune your GPS system when it comes to actually interacting with and getting to know a man. And we hope this has been valuable to you. We'd love to have your comments or thoughts. Feel free to email me at michelle@lovelifecoaching.com. And we will be taking questions and answers on these topics in class number 3. So if you would like to submit a question in advance, you can also send that to me at michelle@lovelifecoaching.com as well. We want to thank you from the bottom of our hearts for sharing this time with us today. We're both sending you lots of love and many blessings and wishing you all the best as you are on your journey to love, and hope that this is helpful to you in helping you fine-tune your Get Your Good Guy GPS system. Thank you for joining us today, and bye-bye for now.
Bye-bye.